From Cherokee to Currituck, from the largest city to the smallest town, and from the state house to the schoolhouse, it's Carolina Journal Radio, your weekly news magazine discussing North Carolina's most important public policy events and issues.
Welcome to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. During the next hour, Donna Martinez and I will explore some major issues affecting our state. A new president means the potential for a major impact on the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll chat with a Campbell University Law School professor. He'll assess the potential legal and constitutional impact of a Donald Trump administration. North Carolina's senior U.S. senator wants to see big fixes at the U.S. Treasury Department, especially the Internal Revenue Service. You'll learn why. Will North Carolina's economy fare well or fare poorly over the next year? You'll hear the forecasts of some of the state's most well-known economists. Plus, we'll delve into North Carolina's dramatic improvement in national rankings of state tax policies. Recent tax reform has attracted attention across the country. Those topics are just ahead. First, Donna Martinez joins us with the Carolina Journal headline.
The United States Congress has begun efforts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. President Trump has already issued an executive order to ease the impact of the law's regulations. But the big question now is, replace Obamacare with what? Catherine Restrepo is the John Locke Foundation's Director of Healthcare Policy. She's taken a look at some of the alternative plans and joins us now. Catherine, welcome back.
Thanks.
For the longest time, literally years, Republicans and conservatives on Capitol Hill have been talking about the need to replace Obamacare. Do they actually have something on paper that they can present?
No, but they're getting close, hopefully. And really, like you said, Donna, there's been a lot of different conservative, market-oriented healthcare reform plans that have been floating around for quite some time. But really, a newsletter that I just wrote last week kind of focuses on if and when this health reform plan's going to get to President Trump's desk to be signed into law, like what will it most likely look like? And so I kind of focus on the similarities and differences between Tom Price's plan, it's called the Empowering Patients First Act, and House Speaker Paul Ryan's plan, which is called A Better Way.
What do those two plans have in common?
Mm-hmm. Well, they focus on putting patients in control over their healthcare dollars. So right now, if someone qualifies for a subsidy for an individual market plan, if they don't get health insurance through their job, that subsidy goes directly to the insurance company. It doesn't go into the hands of the consumer. So with both of these plans, you would have some type of a refundable tax credit where those individuals could use on their own. It would be in their hands to shop for a private plan in the individual market that would offset the total cost of their plan.
This sounds like something that you would like.
Yes. I think it's a good compromise, yes.
Okay.
what I would like probably is not ideal at all, but that's okay. And so we're talking about these universal refundable tax credits. And, keep in mind, Republicans are getting a lot of flack if we repeal Obamacare and don't have a replacement plan, 20 million people are going to lose coverage. Well, with this refundable tax credit, it would actually extend to people who don't have any tax liability at all, people who don't pay taxes. So this would actually cover the current gap population that we have right now in North Carolina, people who aren't eligible for Medicaid and don't earn enough income to qualify for a subsidized health plan on the individual market. So that's pretty significant. And both of these plans also really look to expand the usage and flexibility of health savings accounts. These are tax-preferred accounts where people can use funds. Employers can contribute funds into their employees' health savings accounts, and they can use that to purchase, daily medications, dental, vision necessities, over-the-counter stuff with that HSA.
And the big thing there is that people control their own little bank account of money.
Exactly. And there's more. It's inevitable if you have more people using health savings accounts, it's inevitable that you're going to have more price transparency in the system because, again, going back to the patient, this is a patient empowerment mechanism. for suppliers and healthcare providers to compete and offer the best prices for their patients to compete for customers.
So just to remind our listeners, what we're doing right now is talking about two of these key alternative plans that is basically being shopped around Washington, D.C. at this point, one by Representative Tom Price, one by House Speaker Paul Ryan. So they're similar in terms of tax credits and the use of health savings accounts.
Yes.
What do they do, and are they similar in terms of the big problem we hear people talk about, that is pre-existing conditions?
Yes, and both of them are similar. Well, there are some nuances with the pre-existing condition clauses that they have in both of their plans. So Paul Ryan's plan, it would preserve the Affordable Care Act's pre-existing condition clause. So people who have chronic illnesses, you know, they cannot be denied treatment from an insurance company for that specific illness. Everything has to be covered, or benefits have to be offered for their chronic illnesses. And so he would preserve that clause. Tom Price, however, he does not preserve that. However, both Price and Ryan would have federally funded high-risk pools. So under Price's plan, if somebody was denied by an insurance company for their pre-existing condition, they would still have access to a federally funded high-risk pool that their state would administer. And these premiums are going to be subsidized, and it really allows the rest, you know, it's a win-win because these patients will still have access to coverage for their pre-existing conditions. But it allows the rest of the individual market to be innovative and have a healthier risk pool and have people sign up without needing an individual mandate to have a sustainable risk pool, because if you let the rest of the market innovate and offer more tailored products, I think it's more appealing to more people.
As you've described this, Catherine, it sounds like definitely these are moving towards a more patient-centered, consumer-driven type of health insurance, healthcare plan, which is what you've been writing about for so long here at the John Locke Foundation. But I know that you don't think that either of these plans is really the perfect solution. Give us a sense of what you think that they have left out or they've missed as they put these plans together.
Well, I think that I don't think stuff isn't necessarily missing or left out, but I guess there's this big divide amongst different camps in the conservative libertarian movement of what, you know, the role of government in healthcare reform. So some people are okay with the universal refundable tax credit idea. Others would rather have a tax deduction, but that wouldn't necessarily help people who, you know, don't have any tax liability.
Right. Which one do you think is better? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do like Tom Price's plan. I do. But idealistically, I would have even greater flexibility of health savings accounts. Right now, your maximum contribution to an HSA under Price's plan is equivalent to an IRA contribution every year. I would raise that. I would triple current HSA contribution limits. I would have employers be able to have more flexibility in providing more funds into their employees' health savings accounts so that that employee could not only shop around for a health plan offered by their employer, or they could go into the individual market on their own. I think, you know, the more flexibility and less regulation over HSAs, the more choices patients will have, and I think that will create much more of a competitive marketplace in healthcare.
Catherine, the big talking point you hear in the policy discussion on the national news and talk shows and things is that, well, in this process of repealing and replacing, that it's just going to be chaos for millions of people. It'll be very confusing. Based on what you know now about these two particular alternative plans, will it be chaotic?
No, I don't think so, because I don't think Republicans are going to want to be responding to media questions about 20 million people losing coverage and not having something to replace the repeal. I mean, that just, like, from
defies
a PR perspective,
sense.
Like, that does not look good. It's a very heartless thing to do. So, I mean, even, you know, President Trump, Rand Paul, other ACA opponents, Paul Ryan, really want a heavy, what the media is saying, a down payment on what that replace plan is going to look like so it can be on the heels of the first partial repeal bill that will have to happen through the budget reconciliation process.
We've been talking with Catherine Restrepo. By the way, you can read all of her work on healthcare policy at johnlock.org. Catherine, thank you.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Much more Carolina Journal Radio to come in just a moment.
North Carolina lawmakers head back to Raleigh. There's a new governor in town. Working together or working against each other, they'll make big decisions. Decisions that affect you, your wallet, your home, your business, your kids' education. To keep up with those big decisions, day by day, even minute by minute, look to Carolina Journal, a full team of reporters and analysts. They're watching the action in the state capitol. They're reporting minute by minute developments for you. Carolina Journal. It's available each month as a free newspaper and every day with updated stories at carolinajournal.com. You'll find us on Facebook, too. Share items from Carolina Journal. Share items from the John Locke Foundation. Follow us on Twitter, at Carolina Journal, at John Locke NC, and at Becky Gray. Carolina Journal, it's your go-to source for news about state government and how government affects your life. Visit carolinajournal.com today. Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. In an election pitting two of the most unpopular candidates in history, a common rallying cry was, think of the Supreme Court. Now that voters have spoken and Donald Trump is in line to be the next U.S. president, what is the potential impact for the nation's highest court? Our next guest has been considering that question along with other issues related to the Supreme Court's future. Greg Wallace is a professor at Campbell University's Law School. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we really did hear quite a bit during the election campaign from both sides about, you know, think of the future of the Supreme Court. Well, the voters have spoken. Donald Trump's going to be the president. What might we see in terms of the impact on the nation's highest court?
Well, I think the Supreme Court issue was very important, especially for Trump voters, not so much according to the exit polls for Clinton voters. And I know of many people who voted for Trump solely because of the Supreme Court appointment issue. And that is because the seat of Justice Scalia needs to be filled. And the Senate Republicans have put off filling that seat until the end of the Obama administration. They were successful in their strategy. And so now the question is, who is President Trump going to appoint to the Supreme Court? And if you go with the lists of names that he has released to the media, I think all of those names stand in mainstream of conservative legal thought. They are all, while they may not have the wit and brilliance of a Justice Scalia, they all share his interpretive approach to the Constitution. That is what we call originalism. And so I think we should see in this first nomination here somebody in the mold of a Justice Scalia.
We've also seen via the website for President-elect Trump some ideas about the types of things he's looking for. What do you think about those ideas?
Yes, he says on his website that he's going to appoint judges and justices that adhere to originalism, which is the interpretive approach used by Justice Scalia. Now, what we mean by originalism is that you treat the Constitution as a legal document, a legal text, like a contract or a property, and you understand, you interpret the legal text in its ordinary sense, trying to understand what the meaning was when it was ratified. And you have to look at history and you have to look at the text itself and context and things like that. It's not a perfect approach to constitutional interpretation, but it's far preferable to the approach, to the open-ended approach that the liberal justices take of simply making it up as you go along, of smuggling their own personal political preferences into the law under the guise of constitutional decision-making.
We are chatting with Greg Wallace, professor of law at the Campbell University Law School. There's also an implication, isn't there, for the types of cases that the Supreme Court will be taking in the future, and in fact, some cases that are moving through the courts now that might go away.
Yes, a number of cases that are moving through the courts right now, some of them high-profile cases, are challenges to the Obama administration's use of executive orders and executive authority. Of course, when President Trump comes in, he's going to change those executive policies, things dealing with immigration and Obamacare and Title IX. He will change those policies, and it's likely those cases will then go away.
And that could mean for a shorter docket, at least in the short term, for the Supreme Court if these are cases that were getting to that point?
Yes, there are not any cases so far on the docket that are of earth-shattering import like we've seen with the Obamacare or the gay marriage case or things like that in the last few years. And I think that this Supreme Court term is going to be fairly modest and fairly quiet on that front. There are a couple of interesting First Amendment free speech cases that could help clarify some free speech doctrine, but again, they're not the earth-shattering type cases that we've seen of past terms.
One of the things that you mentioned in a public speech for the John Locke Foundation on the impact of the election was that one of the potential winners was Associate Justice Anthony Kennedy. How does he end up being a winner in this?
Well, the fact that Trump is now elected president, he will get to make the choice. He is going to put somebody back on the court, very much in the philosophy of a Justice Scalia. So what that will result of that is that it will not really change the ideological makeup of the court right now. So Justice Kennedy is still going to probably be the swing voter. The difference will come where we have three justices, two of them that are over 80, and one of them who is about to turn 80. And so if during later in the Trump administration he is able to add one or two more justices, then he could really reshape the court for 40 years to come.
So for the short term, we could end up back in that 5-4 thing that flips back and forth depending on which way the wind blows and which way Anthony Kennedy has considered the case.
Yes, exactly.
Now, moving forward in the long term, what does it say to you that we're going to have a president who's going to be appointing not just Supreme Court justices, but also justices in the courts of appeals and at the district court level who will have a different philosophy than what we've seen over the past 8 years? What kind of impact could that make?
Well, it's going to make a huge impact because it's not just the Supreme Court that decides these cases. It's lower courts as well. And if you've seen, for example, during the 8 years that President Obama has served as president, he has appointed a number of judges to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals used to be one of the most conservative appellate courts in the nation. And yet now, because of President Obama's appointments, it has become one of the most liberal courts of appeals. So you can see how a president in a short period of 4 or 8 years can change the makeup. There are currently 103 vacancies in federal courts right now, not to mention the ones that are going to be created as we go forward into the Trump administration. And so filling those vacancies is going to have a profound impact on the federal court system as well.
Now, at this point, as we're speaking, a lot of what we're talking about when it comes to Donald Trump is based on what he has put out in terms of information on his website or in releasing lists of potential Supreme Court justices. As the actual process unfolds, he gets into office and starts working on this. What are you going to be watching for to see if the words match up with the deeds?
Well, I think that that's exactly the thing I'm going to be watching for, to see, you know, who it is that he's going to nominate. Is he going to stick with somebody off of these two lists, or even there are a couple of good judges that didn't make the list: Judge Sutton in the Sixth Circuit, Judge Kavanaugh in the D.C. Circuit, Michael McConnell, who is out at Stanford, would be a great appointment to the Supreme Court. But if he does follow through, that's the big question: is whether he's going to follow through with both of the appointments at Supreme Court and at the lower court level. A lot of people I know are concerned about Trump going, you know, rogue on us, but I think Trump is going to be one of the most checked and balanced presidents in modern times. You've got a media that's very hostile and going to scrutinize everything he does. You've got members of his own party in the Congress, the Republican-controlled Congress, who didn't support him or who supported him hesitatingly, and you've got the court. So I think that you're going to see a Donald Trump who's very circumspect about what he does, and also who he surrounds himself with. The people that he appoints to advise him, the people he appoints to run his departments are going to be a real telltale of whether he's going to continue to stand sort of in the mainstream of conservative political thought.
Well, we know one person who's going to be watching very closely, as he just told us, is Greg Wallace, professor of Campbell University's Law School. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll have more on Carolina Journal Radio in just a moment.
At the John Locke Foundation, we're leading the effort to clean up the mess left behind by big government liberals. For decades, the powerful left in our state had piled on rule after rule, regulation after regulation, never really caring about the people whose lives are caught in the nightmare of complying. In other words, you. Their handiwork had made it tougher to get a job, even increased the legal risk of operating a business. We say enough is enough, that it's just not fair to you. That's why reform-minded lawmakers have turned to the Locke Foundation for answers, and they've acted to lighten your burden. We're proud that our intellectual firepower has improved lives. You can count on the John Locke Foundation to watch out for your interests, not the special interests. We would be honored to have your help in this fight. Go to johnlocke.org and make a tax-deductible donation right now. The John Locke Foundation. We're fighting for you. We're fighting for freedom.
Government plays a key role in your life, affecting your paycheck, the way you educate your kids, the way you do business. How can you tell if government is doing a good job, making the right choices, spending tax dollars wisely? CarolinaJournal.com tackles those questions every day. The John Locke Foundation publishes Carolina Journal in print each month and on the web each day at CarolinaJournal.com. You'll find exclusive investigative reports on topics no one else is covering. What else? A rundown of the best news stories, editorials, and opinion columns in North Carolina. John Hood's Daily Journal. News stories and important public events at CarolinaJournal.tv. And the voices of the newsmakers themselves at Carolina Journal Radio. In print, on the air, and on the web, you can find the information you need at CarolinaJournal.com.
Did you know you can now advance freedom and free markets just by shopping with Amazon? It's true. Online shopping is now a great way to support the John Locke Foundation. Just shop using the Amazon Smile program and designate us, the Locke Foundation, to receive a portion of your purchase amount. That's right. You shop and Amazon donates money to us, the John Locke Foundation. So here's how it works. Log on to smile.amazon.com. Amazon Smile, it's the same Amazon you know. Same products, same prices. But here's what's better. Amazon donates 0.5% of the price of your eligible purchases to us, the John Locke Foundation. So try it. Be sure to designate the Locke Foundation as the nonprofit you want to support. It's that easy. So now, not only will you enjoy what you buy, you'll also support freedom. Don't forget, log on to smile.amazon.com today. Buy something nice and help defend freedom. Help support the John Locke Foundation.
Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. North Carolina's senior U.S. Senator, Richard Burr, recently had a chance to grill U.S. Treasury Secretary nominee Steven Mnuchin. First, they talked taxes.
Do you commit to the committee to work towards a simpler, more understandable tax code in this country?
I do, absolutely.
Burr also honed in on the IRS.
In April of 2014, the Treasury IG came out with a study. He found that the Internal Revenue Service had paid out $2.8 million in bonuses, as well as tens of thousands of hours of leave and hundreds of pay step increases to employees who were tax delinquent or had committed serious misconduct, including fraud and drug abuse. More recently, in their April 2015 report, the Inspector General found that 108 of 364 employees with willful tax noncompliance cases closed between October 1, 2008 and September 2013 received one or more awards, promotions, quality steps, or voluntary separation incentive payments within a year after being disciplined for tax noncompliance. Will you commit to me today to change this policy, this insane policy?
Absolutely. It sounds very concerning. So I commit to work with you and your staff on it. Absolutely.
In another report, December 2014, the Inspector General of the IRS discovered that there had repeatedly hired employees who were fired for poor conduct and performance after lengthy examination processes on their employment. In fact, the Treasury watchdog found that in a sample of 7,163 employees who were rehired by the IRS, 824, 11% of them, had bad performance in their record as to why they were fired in the first place. And in some instances, it said in their records, do not rehire. Yet the IRS rehired them. Do you pledge to this committee to change that insane policy at the IRS?
That sounds like the most common sense thing I've ever heard. So, well, I absolutely am committed to that.
I appreciate it because I think that with all the questions you've been asked today and all the pledges you've been asked to make, I try to look at it from a value of the American people. The American people deserve better than this because in the private sector, you wouldn't stand for this, would you?
Absolutely not.
You wouldn't have a company that would pay people for non-performance or poor performance. You wouldn't reward individuals by rehiring them if, in fact, they did a poor job last time. And I think the American people look at insane policies like this, and they really do question those that head agencies and, quite frankly, committees like this that have oversight over the agencies.
That's North Carolina Senator Richard Burr discussing problems that need fixing at the IRS. We'll return with more Carolina Journal Radio in a moment.
If you love freedom, we've got great news to share with you. Now you can find the latest news, views, and research from conservative groups all across the state all in one place. NorthCarolinaConservative.com, one-stop shopping for North Carolina's freedom movement. At NorthCarolinaConservative.com, you'll find links to John Locke Foundation blogs on the day's news, CarolinaJournal.com reporting and quick takes, Carolina Journal radio interviews, TV interviews featuring CJ reporters and Locke Foundation analysts, plus opinion pieces and reports on higher education, all of that from the Pope Center for Higher Education Policy, commentary and polling data from the Civitas Institute, and news and views from the North Carolina Family Policy Council. That's right, all of that, all in one place. NorthCarolinaConservative.com. That's North Carolina, spelled out, conservative.com. NorthCarolinaConservative.com. Log on today.
Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokine. What's the economic outlook for North Carolina in the next year? A group of professional economists offered projections recently to state business leaders. Michael Walden is a professor at NC State University.
First and most importantly, I think we're going to have growth. So no R word, no recession. Economic forecasts have actually improved somewhat since the election in terms of GDP growth, in terms of job growth. We will see how the Trump administration's policies progress in Congress, but I think that will... That's obviously gotten a lot of anticipation about the potential positive impacts on the economy. I do think we've seen some reaction already in the financial markets in the sense that interest rates have trended upward in anticipation of some of the Trump policies, as well as inflationary expectations have trended upward. But overall, I think a positive year. I'm not quite on the bandwagon that we're going to get 3 or 4% growth, but I do think we're going to see an upward trend in growth.
Harry Davis of Appalachian State University also represents the North Carolina Bankers Association.
The economy is going to grow faster this year than last. We're going to grow closer to 2%, say, in North Carolina, a little faster than that even, and over 2% at the national level, which would be nice. Employment growth in North Carolina, I don't think it'll actually be as good this year as it was last year, but it'll still be in excess of 90,000 new jobs. The regulatory environment is going to change dramatically, I believe. And I'm talking about federal regulations. The president appoints 4,000 people, and those 4,000 people are going to be pro-business, I think. And so the welcome mat is going to be out in Washington, and that's going to have a tremendous impact on productivity growth, which has been very slow for the last 8 years. So we really need to work on productivity and business investment. And I think we'll see that because there'll be a more pro-business environment in Washington. And so we'll get that business investment to drive productivity.
John Connaughton of UNC Charlotte offered his own projections for the North Carolina economy.
We're sitting now at 7.5 years of economic expansion. So for those of you that like to keep records, and what is it they call it, Moneyball, we're sitting here at the third longest economic expansion of the 33 expansions that we have tracked since 1854. So that's a very long period of time. Harry's right. It's been a really slow set of economic growth at 2% at best during that period. But looking forward to 2017, if you'd have this conversation 6 months ago, I think you'd get a majority of economists suggesting that there's probably the R word in our future late 2017, if not earlier than that. I think that the election cycle has probably postponed that for sure. I'm along with Mike in this, that we're not going to have a recession this year. But I agree with Harry that it probably because of productivity issues, the best we can hope for is about 2%. I'm a little less optimistic than Harry in terms of jobs in North Carolina. I think it's closer to 80,000 in 2017.
Mark Vittner of Wells Fargo in Charlotte chimed in.
The markets have run up on a lot of expectations as to how quickly they think things are going to get done and how much is going to get done. I do think we're going to have tax cuts. I think we'll get an infrastructure program. But realistically, the tax cuts probably won't get done until July or August at the earliest. Reagan's plan was passed in September or signed in September. So things don't happen that quick. Infrastructure, if they got it done in the first 6 months, we'd start seeing money being spent in 2020 or 2021. You can't speed up the environmental approval process. It just doesn't happen. So we haven't changed our forecast all that much. We are a little bit more optimistic on North Carolina, though. It looks to us, when you look at the quarterly census of employment and wages, through June of 2016, we added 111,000 jobs across the state. And I think that that'll probably hold for the year. We had probably added 110,000 jobs in 2016. I don't know that we'll add as many. I think the quality of jobs that we will create in 2017 will be a little bit better than what we added in 2016. So maybe it'll be closer to 100. But good quality job growth there. We're probably growing 3%. North Carolina's GDP is probably growing 3%. And the one thing that I do see that's changing, it changed in 2016, I think it'll change, it'll become more evident in 2017, is that the prosperity is spreading out a little bit beyond Charlotte and Raleigh and Durham.
Those are four assessments of the North Carolina economy from professional economists working in the state. What's the likely impact of a Donald Trump presidency on the economy? Walden's not sure.
We can't be certain, and that's my biggest worry, that we have built up high expectations based on the ideas that President-elect Trump have and based on President-elect Trump having a Republican Congress, and people talk about a flurry of activity in the first 100 days. I'm already starting to see some pushback, for example, on the Trump tax plan. His Treasury Secretary-designate Mnuchin has said that, well, yeah, we're going to cut rates, but you know what? We might look at deductions and exemption. We might pull back those. Well, that's gonna set off some firestorms of opposition. So what I'm worried about, among many things, is that we built up this high level of optimism, and if the Trump program stalls, doesn't get through in the forms that we're expecting, we could see, for example, the stock market, which has gone up tremendously, go down just as fast.
Davis focuses on the impact Trump and his thousands of appointees are likely to have.
Through executive orders, the president can do all kinds of things. And President Obama certainly did, and I think President Trump will come in and start hitting the delete key and hit it a lot. And so we're going to have fewer federal regulations at the end of the first day of his presidency than we did that morning. And the next day we're going to have less than we did the day before. And so it's going to be a different environment in that sense, which I think will be positive for the business environment in this country. And that's the way to drive productivity growth. The other thing I do think that will happen, we do have the highest marginal tax rate, corporate tax rate, in the world almost. And I think that's going to change. We've got to bring the $2.5 trillion that are sitting overseas, because the companies will not bring that money back to the United States because they're not going to pay the high marginal tax rate. So we need to come up with a number that allows $2.5 trillion to come back to this country to be invested in workers and plant and equipment right here.
What's Mark Vittner's take on Trump?
He means what he says. I mean, and I kind of joke about it a little bit, and I said he means everything he thinks he said. I mean, and that is that because you don't take it literally. I mean, he's not going to build a wall from Texas all the way to San Diego, but he is going to tighten border security. That is a hallmark. I mean, a hallmark of his presidency. He is going to cut taxes. He's going to cut corporate taxes. He's going to cut personal taxes. He doesn't know exactly how he's going to do it. And those are very important. They address everything we heard here. And cutting the marginal tax rate will bring more workers back into the labor force, particularly in rural parts of the country, the parts that really put Trump in the White House.
Plus, Vitner emphasizes the impact of Trump's Supreme Court appointments.
You think about the situation with Boeing and how the NLRB treated Boeing. With more conservative Supreme Court justices, that won't even happen because the NLRB wouldn't have had the audacity to do what they tried to do there. And so I think that there's a chance to have a reset, to have a more pro-growth oriented economic policy that'll last 25 years.
That's Mark Vitner, one of four North Carolina economists who gathered recently. They projected the state's economic forecast for the rest of the year. We'll return with more Carolina Journal Radio in a moment.
At the John Locke Foundation, we're leading the effort to clean up the mess left behind by big government liberals. For decades, the powerful left in our state had piled on rule after rule, regulation after regulation, never really caring about the people whose lives are caught in the nightmare of complying. In other words, you. Their handiwork had made it tougher to get a job, even increased the legal risk of operating a business. We say enough is enough, that it's just not fair to you. That's why reform-minded lawmakers have turned to the Locke Foundation for answers, and they've acted to lighten your burden. We're proud that our intellectual firepower has improved lives. You can count on the John Locke Foundation to watch out for your interests, not the special interests. We would be honored to have your help in this fight. Go to johnlocke.org and make a tax-deductible donation right now. The John Locke Foundation. We're fighting for you. We're fighting for freedom. Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Donna Martinez. After years of being ranked in the bottom half of states in key tax policy indexes published by the Tax Foundation, North Carolina has now skyrocketed to among the best states in the nation. That's for both individual and business taxpayers. Dr. Roy Cordato, who is Vice President for Research for the John Locke Foundation, is here to explain why. Roy, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back, Donna.
This is great news for North Carolina.
Oh, yeah, it's terrific. We're looking better and better relative to other states, really, for about the last 5 years.
And why the last 5 years? Because of the accumulation of all of these tax reforms?
Yeah. I mean, we went for years and years in North Carolina without really doing anything serious at all in terms of tax reform. We've had temporary increases in different kinds of taxes, and that would be eliminated, but nothing really to fundamentally reform the tax system. So what happened 5 years ago is that we started to take a serious look. We looked at our corporate income tax relative to the rest of the country and the South. We looked at our personal income tax. We looked at the nature of our sales tax and decided a lot could be done to improve things in North Carolina, make it easier on taxpayers, make it easier on businesses in general by a complete overhaul of the system.
Let's talk about some of the details of that overhaul. Mm-hmm. When it comes to personal income tax, what's different now than it was 5 years ago?
Well, first of all, North Carolina converted from a progressive income tax with a pretty high top marginal rate, 7.75%, to a flat tax. We got rid of a lot of exemptions and special privileges in the tax code. And lowered the rate. Now it's going to be a 5.499%. So that's across the board. It's below all taxpayers have seen a reduction in their rate, not just the top rate payers, and are also experiencing a tax cut.
people may not realize the importance of what you just said. For the longest time, Roy, we've heard a lot of folks who are on the right of the ideological spectrum call for a flat tax. North Carolina has it.
That's right. We've gone the way that to be frank, the federal government's been trying to do for years, and people like Steve Forbes pushed it when he ran for president, and Jack, going all the way back to people like Jack Kemp. North Carolina has accomplished what I would call a true flat tax.
Let's talk about the business side of the equation. There's been a lot of discussion about what should happen with businesses. What kind of reform have we seen over the past 5 years?
Again, what we did was we had a terrible corporate income tax system and structure. And to be frank, I mean, I think all corporate income taxes are bad for the economy. There's a form of double taxation, hidden taxation. But what we did was we took our rate, which was the highest in the Southeast by far, 6.9%. It is now scheduled to fall to 3%. It's gone through a period of several reductions. And it is a de minimis. I mean, it's very, very low rate. And what we did that, again, by getting rid of all the special favors and goodies and giveaways that were embedded in the corporate income tax system.
Why is that important, Roy?
Well, for one thing, the low corporate income tax sends a signal to business. I mean, it's a cost that's imposed on everyone. People say, well, it's a tax on corporations. Well, no. In fact, corporations, because they're just a legal entity, really can't pay taxes. All taxes have to come out of somebody's pocket. And corporate income taxes come in the form of higher prices, lower wages, and fewer dividends. And so it's a hidden tax to the people who pay it. So just in terms of fairness, it's a tax that I think ultimately should go away, but it also is makes it easier to do business in North Carolina.
Now, in this piece that you have written, and folks, you can read it at johnlock.org, you've talked about the fact that in these rankings by the Tax Foundation, North Carolina has improved so dramatically in terms of our ranking versus other states.
Right.
Here in North Carolina, though, Roy, what has all of this tax reform meant to opportunity and economic growth?
Well, we've had some of the fastest growing economies in the nation over the past few years. And I think that's largely due to our tax reform because it was so dramatic, because it sent such a strong signal to entrepreneurs and businesses that we are a good place to set up shop. To expand and so on. I think that had a lot to do with it. And the Tax Foundation, I mean, in terms of business tax friendliness, we went from somewhere in the 40s, I believe, to a number 11 in the nation. And we've been there for a while now, for several years.
Now, last week, the North Carolina General Assembly came back into session for the so-called long legislative session. Mm-hmm. And even though there's been this tremendous tax reform that we've been talking about, the John Locke Foundation says it's not enough. And you've been writing a lot about this, that
right.
There is more work that can be done
exactly.
to continue to reform. One of the big issues you've been writing about, Roy, is capital gains tax. Tell us about that.
Well, capital gains taxes basically are taxes that you pay. It's paid in several forms. If you have the simplest thing that most people know about, if you own a house and you sell it at a higher price than you bought it for, that's a capital gain, and you pay a tax on that difference. There's certain exclusions depending on age and stuff, so on, but not in North Carolina. Those are federal exclusions. North Carolina taxes capital gains. By the way, it's also on stocks, the sale of stocks, or really the sale of any asset. And North Carolina taxes capital gains, unlike the federal government, at the exact same rate that it taxes everything else, when in fact it shouldn't. Capital gains taxes are a double tax, it's taxing income that's really already been taxed, and it reduces the returns to investment relative to to consumption.
You're calling for a reduction and then ultimately a repeal.
Yeah, I think it should be repealed. And but at the very least, there should be a differential between the rate that you pay on other income and you pay on just like there is at the federal level. There's a differential between the rate you pay on regular income and capital gains income.
Roy, you have described it as a bias against savings and investment. In what way?
Well, what it does is it essentially reduces the returns to saving and investment a second time. When your income is taxed the first time through your regular income tax, it reduces all uses for that income, including the returns to saving and investment. But when you hit those returns to investment again with a capital gains tax, you are essentially double taxing. It adds a special penalty on investment income relative to other kinds of returns to use of your money.
And lastly, Roy, we've seen all of this reform. Are you hopeful that we'll see some more?
Yes, I am. I mean, I think there's an appetite for it. The John Locke Foundation can take some credit for the fact that people are recognized and people at the legislature are talking about doing something about it.
We've been talking with Dr. Roy Cordato, Vice President for Research for the Locke Foundation. Roy, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
That's all the time we have for the program this week. Thank you for listening. On behalf of Mitch Kokai, I'm Donna Martinez. Hope you'll come back again next week for another edition of Carolina Journal Radio.
Carolina Journal Radio is a program of the John Locke Foundation. To learn more about the John Locke Foundation, including donations that support programs like Carolina Journal Radio, send email to development@johnlocke.org or call 1-866-JLF-INFO. That's 1-866-553-4636.
Carolina Journal Radio is a co-production of the John Locke Foundation, North Carolina's free market think tank, and Carolina Broadcasting System, Incorporated. All opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of advertisers or the station. For more information about the show or other programs and services of the John Locke Foundation, visit johnlocke.org or call us toll-free at 866-JLF-INFO. We'd like to thank our wonderful radio affiliates across North Carolina and our sponsors. From all of us at Carolina Journal Radio, thank you for listening, and please join us again next week.